Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot at what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menash. On today's show, we're looking at employment statistics, trying to make sense out of what we're seeing. The unemployment rate in the U.S. fell from 3.9% in February to 3.8% in March. Not surprisingly, we're hearing about how low unemployment is, how strong and resilient the economy is. This has prompted Jerome Powell to revise guidance on interest rates and perpetuate the higher-for-longer narrative. I want to draw your attention to some things that I'm seeing in the way these numbers are calculated that, frankly, in my opinion, is obscuring the underlying truth. Let's compare the current economic cycle with the last major cycle and take note of some very major differences. I'm excluding the pandemic as an economic cycle because that economic impact was created artificially by government decree rather than natural market forces. So the last major economic down cycle started in 2007 and it hit bottom in 2012. It was one of the most protracted down cycles in history since the Great Depression. When governments declare someone to be unemployed, that criteria has become increasingly narrow. Successive administrations have tweaked the definition so as to downplay the number of unemployed. After all, a weak economy doesn't get politicians reelected. When someone's unemployed for more than 4 weeks and they've not been actively looking for work, they're no longer considered unemployed. It's deemed that they've dropped out of the job market, and they no longer are counted in the statistics. These are the so-called discouraged workers, and when someone's discouraged, it has the same impact, the same improvement on the unemployment rate as that person getting a job. When someone has a part-time income, they're not considered unemployed. When someone loses a job and then they get a part-time job and then a second and a third to make ends meet, they contribute to the illusion that the economy is going strong. In fact, the payroll survey might even make it look like three jobs were created. Now, if you go back to the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the cost of living was such that a single income could sustain a household. And with the inflation of the 70s and 80s, a single income was no longer enough. Society put a positive spin by talking about the empowerment of women. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm completely in favor of gender equity and women gaining career mobility, and it's been fantastic for women and society. What it has masked, however, is the erosion of household income relative to the cost of living. In the last major downturn, companies like Uber, Lyft, TaskRabbit had already been founded, but they hadn't grown to the point where they're having a major impact on the economy yet. Today, Uber has about 1.5 million drivers in the U.S. TaskRabbit has more than 200,000 people using its platform, either as their primary or maybe as their secondary supplementary source of income. One estimate that I saw suggests about 10% of the people on the TaskRabbit platform use it as their primary source of income. I've got no way to verify that. So if you're driving for Uber, then the government doesn't consider you unemployed. But how realistic is that? The gig economy is showing very high rates of attrition for drivers on the Uber platform. The six-month attrition rate for male drivers is 65%, and the six-month attrition rate for female drivers is 75%. There's almost as many people joining the Uber fleet as leaving on any given day. And we've seen the number of drivers for Uber spike considerably in the last few months. The numbers for Uber in the fourth quarter show that gross bookings grew 22% year over year. When you break that down, it shows what they call mobility bookings, that is moving people, grew 29% year over year, and delivery gross bookings, that's things like Uber Eats, grew 19% year over year. Trips during the quarter grew 24% to an average of 28 million trips a day. So the question is, could this be masking the true unemployment rate? It's very hard to say. What percentage of Uber drivers might be perhaps undocumented people who have entered the U.S. illegally, some of which might be claiming asylum? With the millions of undocumented migrants entering the country, keeping track of the metrics on unemployment and demand for housing is becoming increasingly difficult. When Uber reports its results to the establishment survey, the job creation numbers probably take a big jump. It looks like the economy is doing great, but is it really? Even if you put all of the manipulation of the numbers aside by the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, some of these other contributing factors, I think, make it much more difficult to make sense out of what's happening. And I think the BLS needs to improve its data collection methods to ensure that the underlying data has integrity. Now, I really don't know how they do that. We know there's a problem with the establishment survey, or the so-called payroll survey, because it consistently paints a different picture than the household survey. Now, the economy is not the gig economy. What about high-paying jobs? What about the tech sector that's been an engine of the economy for the last several decades? In most economic cycles, we do see layoffs in the tech sector. This cycle has proven to be no different. Traditionally, many of these layoffs have been in manufacturing, as demand has dropped. But in the current environment, most of the manufacturing now is in Taiwan, China, or the Philippines, so we don't see these workforce reductions. In North America, we see job losses for software developers and for HR. These companies are investing in R&D for revenue that's going to be 2 to 4 years away. So when you hire software engineers straight out of university, it takes a good 2 to 3 years in the workforce before that software engineer is fully productive. I know that. I can say that with authority because I've managed folks coming out of university and I've led those types of organizations. The first 6 months on a job, a brand new hire contributes very little of consequence. So companies can save a considerable amount of money by reducing workforce of these more junior members of the team. They're not going to feel the consequence of that decision for another 2 to 3 years. So in the moment, it's a very pragmatic decision to make. We saw companies like Meta, the parent of Facebook, eliminate 22% of its workforce. And the company doesn't appear to have suffered any loss of revenue. In fact, the revenue has skyrocketed. A lot of the positions eliminated were, in fact, in software development. Tesla just laid off another 10% of its workforce, or about 14,000 people, many of those in the U.S. Those are the public announcements. I'm also aware of statistics from privately held technology companies. Similar story, very large numbers of layoffs. We're in an environment where we can rely less and less on the unemployment statistic as a measure of economic health. When we make our own economic forecasts, as business owners should do, we're correlating other numbers, not just the unemployment numbers, when it comes to assessing the market. As you think about that, have an awesome rest of your day. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.